Some would consider the artist I'm sitting next to right now represents the pinnacle of what it means to be a musician. And that's Dave Holland, for his vision, inventiveness, technique, and courage to go places in music that makes it extremely difficult for us, like myself, journalists, to think about and write about this music in any meaningful way. I would like just to invite you, Dave Holland, here at the Landing Resort at the Soleil St. Lucia Summer Festival, here on the checkout, to let the music do the speaking. We'll just add some color commentary to the mix and some good stories, hopefully. Dave Holland, NEA Jazz Master, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here with you. Thank you.
As a kind of a little teaser here, I thought we would maybe survey your musical activity in the last year or so, and so many interesting projects it's hard to keep track of. Obviously, we're going to talk about Aziza, the band you're performing with here at the Soleil St. Lucia Festival. We'll also explore a music by a Tunisian oud player and sometimes singer,
Anwar Brahim.
And it's called Blue Makam. We're going to be hearing some music from that. And probably my favorite part, a remarkable recording we captured at Rose Theater at Jazz at Lincoln Center with Dave Holland, with Zakir Hussain, and Chris Potter. Also a trio that will be coming to the Montreal Jazz Festival on July 4th. But not to bury the lead here, we're celebrating a record today.
Yeah, there's a new recording I did in May last year, and it's a project I'm really wanting to get done. It's with an old friend of mine from England, Evan Parker, who's an extraordinary musician, saxophone player, very unique approach to the music. And we played a lot together in the 60s, and we've stayed good friends over the years and played a few times together. And I initially thought about recording a duo record with Evan and spoke to him about that, and we set up some dates in May last year to do it. Then I was thinking about it, and I'd been wanting to do something with a really extraordinary percussionist, Ches Smith. And so when this date was set up, I thought, maybe I'll invite Ches and see if he can come and join us. So he was able to do that. A couple of weeks later, I thought about inviting another friend of mine, Craig Taborn, who we've worked together in a few different situations. So that was the group that finally went in the studio in May last year. And the album's called Uncharted Territories.
Well, I have to maybe take issue with the name of the recording, because the first track we're going to hear is Q&A. And if I'm not mistaken, in 1972, you recorded Q&A as your debut as a leader.
I did, yeah.
With Barry Eshoul, Sam Rivers.
And Anthony Braxton.
And so let's do a little before and after of Q&A over all of these years. And I want to just talk to you about what it means to be a free improviser in 2018.
Okay. Thank you.
We just heard both of these recordings next to each other. Besides the obvious differences, how has free improvisation or approaching music in this specific way changed or evolved over all of these years?
Well, I guess you have to talk about musicians rather than just the music, because musicians like Craig and Chez and Evan too have evolved the approach to it and encompassed some new aspects of the language. On some of the tracks on the record, Craig is playing using some electronics, some electronically treated sounds. You know, the language that we were using on the initial record in 72 was relating to that time, those people. I was working with Sam Rivers in a trio with Barry at the time. Anthony and Barry and myself had been working in a group called Circle that also involved Chick Corea. And we were coming off of that time in music, time in the world, and looking at things from that perspective. And so,
which is considered to be a classic avant-garde recording. It's one of the holy grail recordings of this music.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to revisit the song on this album really was that I felt like it would be nice to have this bookend kind of relationship between the two versions and a look at, you know, how a piece of music could be viewed in two different ways by two different groups of musicians. One of the main essentials in any group playing, whatever context the music is listening to each other. In an open form improvisation, you're communicating not just about the content, but about the form of the music and where it's going at any given moment and when it's going to end and how it's going to end. And all these things are read in signals that you've sensed from the other musicians. And how it's changed for me in my own personal playing, I think, is that in the, you know, 46 years since we did the Conference of the Birds album, I've had a lot of different experiences in my life, musically but also personally, which have changed me, given me more to play about in my life, emotional experiences that I've had, life experiences, and then musical experiences of trying to bring together all the different disparate aspects of the music that I love. And so when I listen to my playing now, I hear those sum total of all those experiences coming out.
Well, let's listen to another track from this recording. T1, I think, is the name of it.
I think it's piano bass drums T1, I believe. Yeah, because we coded, we ended up with 6 hours of music from the session, so I was faced with the task, first of all, of trimming it down to two volumes of CDs and then thinking about titles. So we ended up coding the titles according to the day and the take. So T1 would be the first take on Tuesday of that combination of musicians.
Is it obvious to you when a free improvisation is great? Is it sometimes you embark in this, even if you guys are all obviously clearly virtuoso, proficient players with life experience and something to say, but you're all having a bad day and the music just isn't there for whatever reason?
Well, the creative flow, you know, ebbs and flows, as we say, you know. So in the course of the 2 days of recording, you know, when I was reviewing all the takes, there was an ebb and flow to the takes, and some really jumped out as being ones that I would want to use on the recording, and some of them were part of a process. I would say they were all on a certain level because of the players involved.
Thank you.
You know, when I was listening to this music, I thought of all the different players playing and listening to each other and reacting and seeing what music then followed from that very moment. And then if there's a way to like basically plot or mark all of the reactions by all the musicians in a visual way, that would somehow give you this video diagram of how every player is determining the sound that you are seeing.
Wow, that'd be interesting. They have been doing some in the neurosciences, you know, they've been examining the process. They've been putting musicians in under a kind of a brain scan of some kind, which allows them to see what processes are being used in playing music. And it's been some very interesting results. There's a lot going on. Thank goodness I'm not aware of it when I'm playing. I'm just in the flow, you know. But yeah, when you think about it, when you start to contemplate on all the different decisions that are being made along the way and all the instinctive reactions that are going on, it's a pretty amazing process. It's why we need to encourage creativity in the schools. Unfortunately, we're in a process, not just in America, but all over. I was just reading an article about England, where they've reduced, in the UK rather, where they've reduced the presence of the arts in education. And it's being criticized by the arts community. They're saying, look, if we don't encourage creative thinking, we're really going to lose out on some training, which may not be to do with being an artist, but it's to do with how your brain works and developing certain facilities when you're young. And we need to encourage this in young people. We need to give them the opportunity to experience creative activity.
We are in the flow with Dave Holland here at the Soleil Summer Festival in St. Lucia, where he's performing with Aziza and reviewing some of the recordings that he's been a part of. 1972, coming out with Conference of the Birds as a debut artist must have taken a lot of bravery and swag and confidence. Is that part in a result of coming off the road with Miles Davis in 2 years? Like, you knew you could do this?
No. And, you know, you don't feel that at the time. I mean, I remember listening to the takes that we did and not being sure if I was happy with it, honestly. You know, the reason that that record was done, I just met Manfred Eicher maybe a year and a half ago, before this recording, while I was in Europe with Circle. And we did a few recordings while we were there. And then he contacted me. Said, this is Manfred Eicher, who founded ECM Records. He asked me if I wanted to do another album. And I was thinking about it, and I had some material already that hadn't been recorded. And the musicians that I was closest to creatively were Anthony Braxton, Sam Rivers, and Barry Altshuler. Barry Altshuler and Anthony were in the Circle group, as I mentioned, and we'd had a long and fruitful relationship in that situation. And then in New York, I started playing with Sam and Barry and playing at Sam's Loft every day, sometimes for 3 or 4 hours at a time. You know, it was a no-brainer, really, just this is the people I want to do it with. And it wasn't just a thrown-together band. It wasn't just put together for that one project. This was coming out of some real work we were doing together. And I feel the same way now about the same thing about these projects that I'm involved with.
Dave Holland joins us here on the checkout, and we're moving forward with a recording we recently captured at Jazz at Lincoln Center, the Rose Theater. And this Cross Currents ensemble, which you've been a part of for a little bit of time, working with Zakir Hussain, the master tabla player. Chris Potter is now joining you on the road, and you're going to be doing some gigs with him at the Montreal International Jazz Festival.
The group Cross Currents was formed about 2.5 years ago, and it was a concept that Zakir Hussain came up with. Zakir is an extraordinary musician, one of the great tabla players that we have around today. Zakir wanted to bring together some of the Indian musicians that he's been associated with and some American-based musicians that he's been associated with. And we performed it first at the San Francisco Jazz Center a couple of years ago. The band is Louis Banks on piano, who's sort of the godfather, as Zakir refers him to, of Indian jazz and has nurtured many young jazz musicians in India. Gino Banks is his son and plays drums. Sanjay Davicha is the guitarist and extraordinary vocalist, Shankar Mahadevan, who is coming from the South Indian tradition of Carnatic singing and somewhat of a superstar. I say somewhat, he actually is a superstar in India. He's an extraordinary improviser. Chris Potter is the other American bass musician, and myself. So,
and we're going to hear this call and response and exchange on the opening, the kind of invocation of the concert, which I believe is a North Indian Hindustani composition, centuries old, Radhe Rani, about Lord Krishna's divine flute being spirited away, depriving the beasts and the trees of its enchanting sounds. And the majestic bowing work of Dave Holland.
काहे से मैं गाऊं राधे काहे से बजाऊं काहे से मैं गाऊं राधे काहे से काहे से मैं काहे से मैं काहे से मैं लाऊं गया से तुम गाओ I'm
Always in tune when you bow, and that's like the hardest thing as a bassist, right?
I wish. Well, I try. Yeah. You know, that's why we practice. But I have to say it's a hard act to follow. Following Shankar, his incredible improvisations. You know, he'll sing some phrases and then he looks at me. And sometimes I'm like, what do you want me to do now? You know, I can't follow that. Wait a minute.
That's how it was at the concert. Watching him, I thought he was like visualizing the opening of the heavens.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful moment. He sings with great emotion and incredible control and great imagination. He's really an extraordinary musician.
And the understated phrasing, the way he like clips off the singing, I thought was so powerful.
Well, you know, there's a whole style to the vocal aspect of the music, which is played also by the instrumentalists in India, the glisses and the ornamentations and so on. It's one of the things that it's been great to be deeper in and learn from, you know, to understand some more of the subtleties that are involved in the music. It's been a great experience for all of us, but I think speaking for myself, and I think for Chris as well, it's been a real privilege to be working with Zakir and the other musicians. And from this experience, we've learned a tremendous amount. It's given us a lot to think about in terms of other ways of putting music together, other ways of thinking about rhythm and melody and improvisation in general. There's several different ways of organizing rhythm in Indian music, and it's a lot of it is based on math and numbers. Used creatively, of course. There's a thing called the tihai, which is the way that an improvised section is usually ended, which is the same phrase repeated three times. And the phrase would then resolve usually on the first beat of the next bar.
And that's when you get into the thing where you're all sort of like entering the musical conversation, the call and response.
Yeah, there's a lot of call and response, and sometimes even matching. Like if a tihai is started, if the other musicians catch it, they can then play the conclusion of it. There's a lot of things like that. There's a contraction, expansion of a phrase where they'll take one phrase and gradually add one beat and then two beats and three beats. It's just extraordinary. And as I said, it's given us a lot of things to think about. Thank you.
We're speaking with Dave Holland at the Soleil Summer Festival here in St. Lucia, exploring some of his recordings over the past couple of years, including this next one, as we are entering different tonal centers of the world and the way we think about percussion and rhythm. Well, some parts of the world think about melody and harmony much differently. We're going to be going into another recording with this Tunisian oud player playing a style of maqam.
Anwar Brahim. The compositions on the album are all written by Anwar, and they've all been influenced in some part by his experiences, certainly in traditional music from that part of the world, and has had a lot of interaction with musicians from other disciplines, other cultures. He's worked with Turkish musicians and with European musicians and so on.
Well, I don't hear the like really drastic kind of scale stuff that I normally attribute to Arabic music, you know, the quarter tones, for instance. And you are known as a master of tone. How do you approach tone when you're dealing with these styles of music?
Well, Anwar's music that he presents to this group and also the other project I did with him, you know, with the presence of the piano, that's a tempered tuning. It's a tuning that was created, you know, during the 1700s to accommodate being able to play in different keys on the piano. And they do have quarter tones and notes which are not produced on the piano. And I think for that reason, partly, Anwar doesn't write music or doesn't utilize that concept in the music that he plays with me and with the other members of the band. But no, the scales that he uses in the compositions, many of them are based on Arabic scales. I think what he's done is created a context for them where they can be melded with a harmonic setting.
We can listen to Blue Maqam, the title track, here with Dave Holland. Is it weird kind of playing with an oud player? Because I hear him playing a lot in the low end.
No, it's beautiful. Both the bass and the oud are non-fretted instruments. In other words, they don't have the metal strips across the fingerboard, which is where you would put your finger. You put your finger behind them. On a guitar, it's a fretted instrument. On the bass, it's just a fingerboard like the violin. So your finger makes the pitch is created where your finger is. On a guitar, the pitch is created where the fret is, and you put your finger behind the fret. So this means that there's certain expressiveness that's available because of the non-fretted nature. You can slide into notes, and you can do all kinds of things like that. And then, as you said, the oud has quite a low pitch. It doesn't go as low as the bass, but so I feel that they're really related. They have a relationship which I find really beautiful. You know, the sonority of the two instruments really seem to blend beautifully together, and I love playing the melodies. There's some things on them on the record where we're playing unison melodies together, and I love that combination of sounds that are created by it.
As we near the end, why don't we actually go to the band that you are performing with here at the St. Lucia Summer Festival with Eric Harland, the master drummer from Houston, Chris Potter, your longtime friend. You're recently celebrating your 20th anniversary of playing together, and of course, a Benin-born, New York-based guitarist, Lena Luecke, everyone's favorite guitarist on the jazz scene, it seems, these days. It's a leaderless group, so everyone gets to contribute some music here, and we'll go with yours here, Finding the Light. You know, as you mentioned to me on the plane, you're keeping after it. You're keeping busy, you know, keeping it moving, I think you said to me. Yeah. I mean, without obviously getting too specific about anything and respecting your privacy, but the old adage of the suffering that an artist might go through that might also result in a more fruitful period of work. Is there anything to that?
I think sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's a joyful moment as well that leads to a creative surge and wanting to express that. I think it all goes into your life experiences, and you know, I just finished reading a book of Beethoven's life, and it was extraordinary, the political and the social context out of which he made his music, and the personal conflicts that he had, strife and unresolved feelings that existed within him, all came out in his music as well. And a great love of nature came out as well in his music. So I think that's what you draw on in your playing, you know, once you draw on what feelings you have about your experiences in life, and then the music's a vehicle for expressing them.
Well, you must be living life the right way then, because the music sounds great.
Well, it's just being engaged in it, I guess, is the main thing, isn't it?
Dave Allen, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and I really enjoyed this.
Thank you. I enjoyed it too. Thanks very much.
Another original composition from Dave Holland entitled Walkin' the Walk from Aziza. That's Dave Holland, Chris Potter, Lena Loecki, and Eric Harlan. Dave Holland is coming to the Montreal International Jazz Festival this Wednesday, July 4th, playing with, I would say, my favorite band he's touring with right now, with the tabla master Zakir Hussain and the saxophonist Chris Potter. It should be quite a show. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast already, go to iTunes and Stitcher right now. And follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page to check out from WBGO. At Checkout Jazz is our handle on Twitter. You can hit me up at Simon Rentner, also on Instagram. I would like to give a special shout out to our production intern, Anthony Nieves. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rentner. Thanks for checking us out.